Harp, Whitey, Rama. This is RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
24 to 8 on a Thursday morning after 8 o'clock. Simon Hill's going to join us from Fox Sports. Jess Fox is Tokyo-bound for Australia. We're going to chat to her after 8 as well. But get a chance now to speak to Conrad Marshall, who, according to his Twitter page, is an insufferable Tiger fan. So therefore,
and they are often dangerous. I know quite a few of those.
Volatile characters. But I reckon it would be nice to be able to be inside the walls and document what's happening, particularly in the last couple of years, with a great success. And his new book is called Stronger and Bolder After the 2019 Season. And he's with us in studio. Conrad, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. As an insufferable Tigers fan, what is it like being a part of the tapestry of the Richmond Football Club?
Oh, it's a dream come true. You know, I'm 41 years old, so I'm part of that lost generation that's sort of grown up with Richmond being, you know, a joke or a misery all the way throughout my life. And then it turns around in the last 3 years, and I'm lucky enough to be in there and witness it from the inside. So, amazing experience.
I'm sure. And you had a great reaction to the 2017 book, Yellow and Black, after the premiership, after the drought. The lost generation would have had great joy in reading the book. When that happened, did you always have an inkling that you wanted to get back involved again and do another one? Was this planned, or was this just something that has sort of evolved through the journey?
I think I wanted to stay connected to the club, you know, because I'd been there in 2016 and 2017, spent a lot of time there and got to know people, and had in the back of my mind a book called Yellow and Black to Back, hoping that we would win in 2018. So I was sort of, I was embedded during the final series in 2018, and that ended quite badly. But I, you know, I stuck around. Kept writing sort of player profiles for the Richmond website during the 2019 season, and then we thought, well, we'll you know, get in there and see if we can go again in 2019, and it's just panned out in brilliant fashion.
And I imagine that 2018 final series was a pretty important phase for the 2019 season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was there in the rooms after that loss to Collingwood and watched Dimmer bring everyone in together in a circle, not just the players and the coaches, but all of the support staff, all of the volunteers, a lot of board members down there, some family and friends. So it was a whole of club kind of thing where he drew everyone together and explained that even though it was a bad loss, a terrible night, that he would remember the 18 win season that was, because it was a really, really strong season, you know. It was Richmond then daylight for a lot of that year. And also, he just wanted to reiterate that message that success is not about that one game. It's not even about that one season. It's measured in years.
Were you thinking that speech may have come at halftime of the Geelong prelim final this year?
I beg your pardon, sorry.
Were you thinking that speech may come again?
It was a little shaky, wasn't it? 21 points, though, is not much to be in arrears given how much Geelong were controlling the game that night.
So were you, within the final series, obviously, were you inside the coach's room when he was making those speeches at halftime before the game? Were you in there and had that type of access?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, it was limited. I wasn't in coaches' boxes, and there were certain doors that were closed in the club. But before the game, halftime, after the game, I was in all of those meetings where he's sort of delivering his message and his inspirational speeches to the players. I was in opposition analysis during the week. I was in match review. I could sit in on most sort of peak performance sessions within the club, whether it's Emma Murray delivering a kind of guided visualization and meditation session, to just lurking while the players are doing, you know, weights and things like that, or standing on the sidelines while they're training.
What do you find, or what did you find most surprising about that access? When is it the depth that the coaches go into, or is it the lack of depth that the coaches go into?
I reckon it's definitely the depth. So you could write a whole other book on the scope of kind of the detail in the tactics that they use and the strategies that they bring to bear on game day. Honestly, even though I was sort of there all of 2016 and 2017 and large parts of 2018 and 2019, there are still things about the game plan and the way they explain things in those meetings that mystify me. Like, I think unless you sit down with those line coaches and have them really walk you through their whole lexicon and all of the terms that they have for the way they're supposed to play, you're not going to understand it. Like, it's impressively deep, but then at times they know how to make it impressively simple as well. How it's just about playing on instinct, particularly when attacking. You know, that's the message inside Tigerland: just play.
So the premiership is the defining story, but what were the themes that you went through throughout the book?
I would say it's a lot of the things that we heard coming out of Richmond in 2017. So it's about connection. It's about authenticity. It's about kind of vulnerability and opening yourself up to not just your teammates, but the rest of the club, and making sure that everybody's aligned and on the same page and knows who one another are. It's about sort of I see you and you see me, and that's what produces this effort that, you know, has success on the field.
You just mentioned the word that I want to ask you about, authenticity. Mm. What do you think that means?
Well, I think it means just showing up as your best self, and not not having surface deep relationships with people, but truly telling them who you are and what your struggles are in life. And you know, they do that through any number of ways at Tigerland. We've heard about those the Triple H sessions that started at the beginning of 2017, where a player gets up and shares three stories of his life, of a hero. And a hardship and a highlight. And those kind of sessions, you know, they had certain players breaking down into, you know, into tears, just telling telling their tale. And once you know all of those things about another person, it's much easier to have a sort of a meaningful relationship with them in the workplace, rather than just sort of that, as I said, surface deep relationship that we have when we're sitting in a cubicle next to one another and saying, "How was your weekend?" "Oh yeah, pretty good. How you feeling?" "Yeah, a bit tired." Know, saying nothing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting, because without sort of going too far back, that they were a fractured playing group, and they found a way through what you're talking about to get themselves back on track. And I think it actually really came to the fore more than anything else halfway point of this year, where a lot wasn't going well for them. They're just outside the eight. They've won as many as they've lost. They've got all these injuries, but they seem to have this not only inner belief, but they didn't panic, because they have this inner belief of working together to get themselves out of it.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard Jake Nile describe the 2019 flag as a flag that was won in April.
Yeah.
You know, it was won on the back of sort of some really hard-fought victories over Port Adelaide away, over Fremantle when they were playing quite well also away. And I think it came down to that togetherness, that connection, the ability to sort of withstand that pretty brutal sort of run of injury early on, not to mention what they call sort of the trauma of losing Alex Rance. I think that was a psychological blow as much as a tactical one early on. So they had a lot to overcome, and I think just a lot of those lessons that they learned in 2017 really came to the fore in that fractured moment too.
And then the other thing is calmness. That when things weren't going well, that they didn't panic. Now, whether that was, as I mentioned, the injuries and the middle part of the year, or also in games where they were behind, that they didn't panic. Now, Richmond's of the past, and you know, you would have got witnessed that a lot as a fan, they would panic. Mm. But this same group didn't panic.
No, that's right. And I reckon that is, just taking on from what Raman was saying, that's a learning probably out of the 2018 preliminary final. You know, they got behind early. They were really under siege. And they acknowledged that rather than trying to stick to their process and get back one moment at a time, one step after another, one act after another, they tried to go too quickly. They tried to, you know, make up six goals in a quarter and get the game back on their terms when that wasn't going to happen. The way to win it, and the way Richmond did it in a couple of these games where they got behind, like against Geelong, like against Brisbane, like against West Coast late in the year, was that they pegged it back slowly.
How hard was it to get this book up and going with Neil Balm there?
Neil Balm, he gets quite a bad rap, I reckon, as a shutdown kind of player. He was actually really encouraging all the way through. He's like a big teddy bear walking around that football department. And
he's mellowed.
I guess so. And he, you know, there were certain things like I couldn't keep up taking notes on some of the videos that they would play to players. And I mentioned that to Barmy. He was like, "Oh, just go to the video blokes, get them to give you a copy of it, you know, send it to you by email." So that's indicative of how open he is, I think.
Which individual within the football club has surprised you most?
I think it always comes back to Dimmer, and I feel like a broken record in saying this, but just he impresses me in I guess the way that he shows how a person can change. You know, he was a very different beast in 2016 than the guy who came back at the start of 2017, and then the way that he's grown throughout 2018 and 2019. I've said to people before, he was a brutal speaker in that 2016 season. Fire and brimstone, really inspiring stuff, would have the players ready to, you know, smash through brick walls, but it didn't lead to great results on field. The speeches that he gives now, they're calm, they're funny, they're sort of loving more than anything. So just that ability to change yourself, reinvent yourself, it's deeply impressive.
So the success of 2017, how did it transform the club, not just the playing group, but the club and what they were able to achieve, and realising that finally, after a pretty bold plan from the board that was initiated whenever it was, the 5 years and the 100,000 members and the two flags, which is pretty bold at the time. How did it change the club?
I think Brendan Gale has spoken about this before and sort of said that the most surprising thing about it is that it feels normal. It feels like the way Richmond should be, the way Richmond has seen itself. And that's not in dynastic terms. Like, they don't want to... They will not use the word dynasty. That's not what they're about right now. They want to be a club that creates an opportunity, gives themselves a chance, keeps presenting year on year. What that looks like on the field might be top four, but it might also be just getting into the top eight after a really tough year, injury-wise. So what the phrase that they use coming out of there now is humble and hungry. That's what they want to remain, and I think it's a pretty good way to be.
So how the challenge that now, knowing that these guys have been able to achieve, but they've still turned over players, to go forward again and do it again, because everyone now watching much closer to Richmond, because it's not just a one-off. This is a sustained period of excellence. It's not a dynasty, as they might not want to say, but it is a sustained period of excellence. To continue that, is it important to rejuvenate from their perspective, from a playing list?
Well, I think that's just a natural part of what goes on. We probably think of teams that have sustained success over a 2 or 3 year period as being the same core group. And while there are stars in the best 22 that remain throughout those years, the number of players that get turned over at any club in a given year is probably more than we think. Think about 6 new players coming in at the start of 2017, probably the same amount at 2018. There's going to be another handful coming in a couple of weeks. So the playing list is constantly evolving. And all of those new guys, who now are like a third of the list, they have to learn the lessons as well. You know, they haven't heard any of that messaging from early 2017. They need to learn it all afresh.
From a coaching perspective, it's fresh meat, Rami. You like fresh meat. New audience, fresh meat, all the same gags over and over again.
from a football fan, your perception of Damien Hardwick to now what you know of Damien Hardwick as a person now, how different was it?
Very, very different. I think I thought of him probably in terms of his playing persona. You know, he was this hard nut sort of defender, this guy that would be sent to the opposition on baller, you know, playing that tagging role every now and again. He was in their face, he was body on body, he was mouthy, he had a sneer, like, I'm a Richmond supporter, I hated Essendon, so I hated Hardwick, you know. He was one of those players. So then coming across him and learning that he's this lovely family man, that he has this great sense of humour, that he adores his players and likes a man hug, like, it's a very strange thing to encounter that.
Why are you laughing, Rama?
I'm just thinking of Dimmer. As a teammate, he's one of my absolute favourite teammates, but he was mad. He's absolutely mad. Where does the Marlon Pickett story sit in the book?
Marlon Pickett, yeah. I got a chapter on him just sort of before the grand final, and talks sort of about his life and also a lot about the kind of struggles that he had, not just in prison. Like, I watched a long documentary about him and his time in prison. He featured in it in 2014, I think. I think people have sort of missed also the hard road that he had to walk once he got to Richmond. So there were three sort of significant deaths in his life. So he's over in Melbourne, broken finger, training throughout winter, trying to get up to speed, trying to get up to AFL fitness, and he has to fly back to Perth 3 times in 3 months to bury loved ones. So he's what he's come through to then put together this run of 1 month of solid VFL form, best on ground in the VFL grand final, come out on grand final day, have 22 clean touches, one iconic goal. It's extraordinary. It's probably the best debut story in the history of Australian rules footy.
And the other story I wanted to talk about is Jack Graham, because Damien Hardwick is still talking about Jack Graham's performance in the preliminary final with a busted shoulder, and we talk about culture and what that might then become over time. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. It feels like he'll become sort of Richmond's Prestigio Giacomo in a way.
Yeah,
That sort of selfless act that became really famous within Collingwood. Well, that's what Jack Graham is in large fashion now. I mean, he busted that shoulder before halftime, came off, it kept sort of popping out. He, you know, put his hand up immediately to go back on, although not his right hand, he put his left hand up. And then went out there, and I read only recently and managed to get it just into the book, he had more pressure acts on the ground than any Geelong player. A guy that, you know, spent a lot of time on the bench getting this thing fixed up and popped back in, and then could barely tackle but did so anyway. Damien Hardwick doesn't often single out players.
No, he doesn't. Good point.
You know, and he doesn't do that even behind closed doors very often. And he singled out Jack Graham at the end of that match. He was like, "There is a chapter in our history book that will be written about you, Jack Graham." I didn't write a whole chapter about him, but
a couple of pages is a nice way. Stay with us, Conrad. We need to get to a break. We'll come back and talk more about the new book, Stronger and Bolder, the season of 2019 for the Richmond Football Club. They've been a dominant force, and Conrad's had a bird's eye view of it all in the last couple of years. Back with more shortly.
Harford, White, Ramanaskis. This is RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
Great to have Conrad Marshall with us in the studio today. His new book, Stronger and Bolder, a continuation of the series that he wrote. Well, not series just yet, two books, but hopefully it is a series for Tiger fans, the way things are rolling, and might just be the way they are playing at the moment, the Tigers. But I want to ask you about, we've been talking about players and stories in this 2019 season, Jack Higgins situation. How did that affect the club and his impact on the footy club through the season? Because he seemed to be almost a mascot from afar for the Tigers this year.
Yeah, look, I think he was a huge part of 2018. We've all seen that excellent vision of him sort of giving these funny little rev-up speeches out on the ground to the playing group, and he's really warmly loved there. And I was in the club when some of the news was coming down about how serious the bleed in his brain was, and Dimmer was sort of talking to the playing group about that, and you know, Dimmer was tearing up in front of the playing group. He's talking to them saying, you need to get out there on this training session right now and enjoy it. You need to enjoy the moment that you have within these finals to get out there and have fun kicking the footy, preparing for a big game, because Jack Higgins would give anything to have that moment right now. And the same goes for Alex Rance, the same goes for sort of Sydney Stack, who was injured then too. And I think when Higgo came down to sort of run around the boundary a little bit in training immediately before the grand final, or was it the prelim final? Either way, it really sort of buoyed the spirits around the club.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's going to be an important figure coming back, so hopefully he has a really good result in resting this off-season and getting back in the pre-season at some point.
Hopefully.
Is Dustin Martin misunderstood? Or does anyone understand Dustin?
Dustin. He doesn't even say anything in meetings. Like, naturally, I wasn't sort of able to get an interview with Dusty because he doesn't give them, but you would think...
Only to Serena Williams that it
that's
is.
That's right. But you would think being in all of those pre-game meetings or all of those opposition analysis meetings or match reviews that you would glean something from Dustin, but he's a largely silent figure. He is what he does. But I will say that probably his team first attitude and his sort of love for that group is a little bit understated. I've heard people say, for instance, you know, they take the best players off the ground in the last few minutes when you're in front, and so you often see Dusty on the boundary. Well, the people that are on that bench, guys like director of coaching and high performance Tim Livingston and Craig McRae and others, they say that of all the players who stand there and celebrate the win when that siren goes. Dusty is, you know, the most up, the most enjoying it. He is, you know, he's a team man, even though he's an individual star.
One other star before we let you go. I've only got a minute to go, but Alex Ranch, you mentioned him. He knew effectively from the first half hour of the season that his chances of being a premiership player were going to be very, very slim, and he pulled the pin early enough to be able to close the chapter and let everyone else focus on their job. What was he like through the year, Alex, being such a dominant presence for the last decade?
He was amazing. I think everyone remembers just how sort of gracious and warm he was when he went down with the knee, and how he sort of reinvented what that should look like. You know, it shouldn't all be about tears and just enjoying what you have. But then he became a leader in a whole different sense throughout the year, just... mentoring all of the VFL guys. He took specific players under his wing and taught them. He was a constant voice out on the track. Like, he was quite inspirational. He won the Francis Burke Award this year, of course, with Jack Graham. So that tells you about what he's doing off the field when he's not playing. But by the same token, and I've got a chapter about him in the book, you know, when it came towards the end of the season, it was incredibly hard for him. Because he was running, he was cutting at full speed, he was doing everything. He was like, I could be out there playing, but what if I'm out there and it goes again and we lose a prelim because I've been off for three quarters and we've been a man short? You know, you just had to pull the pin and make that selfless call.
Tigers fans, you should get this book if you haven't already. Stronger and Bolder, available in all good bookstores. Conrad, great to chat. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Arf.